Seattle expansion draft comes and goes. Not that there were many surprises yesterday. We'll get to what happened yesterday with the Seattle expansion draft. Today is general manager press conference day. We've heard from Pierre Dorion. We've heard from Marc Bergevin. In moments, we're going to go to Kyle Dubas' press conference, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Big situation in Leafland / Oilerland. An impending deal between the Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers involving Zach Hyman. And it sounds very much, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, good afternoon. Sounds very much like this will be pretty similar, I don't want to say identical, but pretty similar to the Josh Anderson deal in Montreal, which is 7 years, $38 million, which is 5.5 AAV, unless the Maple Leafs can do a sign and trade, add the extra year, and maybe lower the salary cap hits. That's a lot right there. People have said, like, there's conversations online about this is the Lucic deal 2.0. Others say, well, you're really just paying for his prime right now. You can't worry about down the road because McDavid needs players. We're going to get to this deal here in a couple of seconds, but right now, let's hear from Leafs general manager Kyle Dubas on Hockey Central.
Need to ask a question, a follow-up. Welcome, Kyle.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to start by recognizing what I would say is the courage of Luke Prokop. Earlier this week, Nashville Predators prospect and player on the Calgary Hitmen to go public with the fact that he is gay, and as a 19-year-old trying to climb his way through hockey, I thought that was extremely courageous, and I think it was also great to see the tremendous support from the hockey world for Luke. So just wanted to start by recognizing Luke and his courage, and I think it will be a major event that will encourage more young men and young women in our sport to be very comfortable with who they truly are. So that was an excellent way to start the week. Moving on to less important matters, is the actual hockey. We obviously went through the expansion draft process this week. Our strategy going into the expansion draft was to try to get out from a process where we knew that we were going to lose a player by giving up as least we possibly could to Seattle. And with all the information that we acquired from, you know, really the end, from the trade deadline through to the decision on Sunday morning when submitting our protection list, our determination was to go out and acquire a player for a prospect and late pick. And then allow Seattle to pick between the main players on our protected list. And if we got out from the process by giving up the prospect and the late pick, but maintaining our roster, we were content with that. And if they took another player off our roster in a similar position, we had acquired the replacement. So that was our strategy with that. We've got the draft coming up on Friday and Saturday, 3 picks, 2nd, 5th, and 6th round pick, and then we'll get into free agency next week. And with that, I'll open it up to any and all questions you may have today.
Right, we'll begin with Chris Johnson, Sportsnet. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Kyle. I'm just wondering, you know, it looks like Zach Hyman might be moving on from the team. You know, where are things at for you with him? Are you still hoping to retain his services? And if not, what's it going to take to replace what he brought to you guys?
Yeah, I think it was our intention going in to retain Zach's services. He's been an excellent player for us for his entire career here, and I think everyone loves him as a player and a person. We have certain limits that we can go to, and we've tried to extend ourselves as best we can, knowing that there would be a strong market for him. And so about a week ago now, or 7 or 8 days ago now, we gave Todd Reynolds and Zach permission to begin speaking to other teams, try to move the process along so that we would have a better picture heading into free agency as to where we actually stood and how we could go about trying to replace Zach if that was going to be the conclusion. At this time, I've not heard from Todd regarding the reports this morning, so I can't comment too deeply on that, Chris.
Okay, but would you be open to a sign and trade if that's something that presented itself?
We're open to anything that can help to make our team better. So if there's fair value to be had there, then we'll certainly explore it.
Next up, we'll go to Mike Seisberger, NHL.com. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Kyle, thanks for doing this. Obviously, how do you, you know, if you do lose Zach, how do you replace what he brings to the table? Because when we talk about intangibles, he could be the poster child for it.
I don't disagree with you, Mike. Zach has shown night in and night out that that he's going to give his very best to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we certainly have valued that over the years, and that's why we've tried to find a solution here. But Zach has earned every dollar that he's going to get in free agency, and he's done it certainly not the easy way as well. So there are going to be times as we go through this, especially with the salary cap being what it is, the commitments that we've made, where we're going to have to make difficult decisions, and it will be on myself more than anybody else and our management group to begin to replace the different talent and the different intangibles that a player brings in the room, and also continue to see growth from our own group of players that are already signed here in those areas.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Lance Hornby, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Lance.
Sorry, Kyle. I just put it with the situation of maybe losing a couple of guys. It seems to be your plan right now to save as many off the roster as you can. How do you reconcile that with what happened in the playoffs moving forward?
Sure. I think fairly simply, Lance, I understand that some may look at it and say this group hasn't gotten it done, and thus why aren't there significant changes. But for better or worse, I believe in this group, and I believe that they are going to get it done, and I believe that they're going to win. And I understand that comes with certain doubt because of the fact that we have not broken through in the playoffs, but it's my belief that they will. I believe in them as players. I believe in them as people. And I know that decision lies on me and what the risk is for me and going ahead that way. So I'm comfortable with it. I believe that we're going to see the best version of this group next season that we've seen yet. And I'm willing to bet everything on that.
My follow would be, how many late nights have you had, sleepless nights, wondering one overtime goal changes the whole narrative that we've seen in the past since June 1st?
I've had sleepless nights for other reasons, Lance, but I think once something's over, you try to park it and move past it and not live in that and look at how can we take this group and how can we push them to break through. And in the end, that comes down to me doing my job as best I can, especially at a time like this where we haven't met that expectation, and trying to set the group up in a way, whether it's through internal development or finding the pieces that can continue to push us in that direction and have that breakthrough happen. So, you know, this is not a job, I think, where you have many great sleeps night in and night out, as others I'm sure can attest that have done it for far longer. So I knew what I signed up for, and it's a great challenge we have ahead of us, and just looking forward to embracing the challenge ahead versus looking at what might have been with a bounce here or there.
We'll go to Kevin McGran, Toronto Star. Go ahead, Kevin.
There we go. Just two questions, one on the expansion draft and one on the coming draft. But when you got Jared McCann at such a reasonable price, were you at all tempted to change your thinking and go 7-3 run rather than 8-1?
We thought about it, Kevin. And I think that's one way I would understand why you would look at it. But the other part of it was it wouldn't just be by going 7-3-1 because the cost was what it was. Would that be smart? It was also, if we went 7-3-1, who are we going to be losing? And then what would the cost be to replace that person at their current cap hit? And obviously that would give us increased exposure on defense. And we knew what the market was shaping up to be in terms of free agents. And I think that manifested itself a little bit last night. And then we also knew what kind of the available players were and who we thought they were. And so I can understand why someone would look at it that way and say we should have kept Jared or others. But our view of it, having more complete information and analyzing it a little bit differently, was There was that option, but there was also going to be the cost and whether we could replace the player who we lost at that cap hit in the marketplace or in trade. And then it just didn't add up for us in a net positive way. So we just elected to keep the strategy as is, but we did look at it and investigate it for countless days prior to the trade and then in the subsequent days, hours after.
And the upcoming draft, you've got 3 picks, I believe. Do you have any intentions of trying to get more? And what are your thoughts on a crazy draft where maybe a lot of players didn't even play this so much this year?
Yeah, we kind of looked at this going into the last draft, Kevin. That's why we kind of tried to load up on more picks then. So our and looking at it, knowing that we expected to contend on the year and that we may be putting out picks to try to improve our group. I think last year we had 12 draft picks. And so this year with 3, so from October 2020 to July 2021, we're going to add 15 new prospects to our system was the way that we viewed it. And we thought we had a more complete set of information on the players in the October draft and knowing what was coming with what we expected from our team and thus what was going to happen to our draft capital at the trade deadline. We tried to shift to 2020 to pick players we thought we'd have a more complete view on. And, that said, I think we still expect our scouting staff here to do a great job with the 3 picks we've got and be able to return some players and knowing the work that John Lilly and the staff have put into it, I'm confident that we will make the most of it.
You're listening to Leafs General Manager Kyle Dubas post-expansion press conference on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, Kyle, just on this weekend's draft, how would you describe the kind of organizational philosophy heading into the draft, both in terms of the type of player you'd like to acquire and any positional needs you might want to fill through the draft?
Yeah, thanks, Josh. I think I'll answer your second question first. Positional needs, I think that in the draft, we would certainly like to kind of come out even in terms of wingers, centers, defense, goalie. But we never also want to sacrifice best players available or take huge steps backwards in terms of what we rank the talent of the player as or what their projected future role may be in the NHL, just to say we've kind of satisfied a positional allotment. What a player's position is when they're drafted, we can also impact a change through development or things of that nature. I'm talking more winger to center or vice versa. Can't really change a forward to a goaltender. At least I haven't seen it yet. So, we've tried to balance it out as best we can, but not sacrificing it overall pick value, I would say, is the best way to put it. In terms of our philosophy, we're trying to find the best players possible that check off our scouting criteria. And obviously, talent is a key thing, but so is toughness, so is intelligence, so is defensive play. And we've just tried to follow that here for the last several years. And as we've kind of, 2018 was a bit of a weight change with the changes that came in May. And then 2019, I thought we did well. And last year, we're happy with the early returns on our draft there. So we'll just keep sticking with that. I think the scouts have done a great job and the leadership of the scouting department has done a great job. But we're always tinkering and looking at areas where we've maybe missed or we haven't valued enough and adapt and roll from there.
And you mentioned internal development. This is maybe a little bit left to center, but you had Rodion Amarov in Toronto for a month. What did you and what did the development staff see from him that maybe would lead you to believe he could be a player for you guys sooner rather than later?
Yeah, we signed him at the conclusion of his season at UFA. Their playoffs that he came over while we were still playing, of course, and was around our staff. I think the it was a great opportunity for him to come in, Josh. And I think the language is a major element that doesn't get looked at enough. And I'm fortunate to have Nick Antropov with our staff here. He can communicate clearly with him. I was just really impressed with how quickly Rodion picked up on the different developmental areas that they were trying to work with him on. They just tried to, Haley and Danielle and Daryl Belfry, the staff that work with him day in and day out, just tried to get him set as best possible to go back to the UFA and get ready for the season there, which they're already in their training camp and they're a few weeks away from starting their preseason games and then their season. So it happens quickly, and we wanted him to just begin to maximize really the things we need to work with him on so that he can transition over here as soon as possible. when he's ready to do so. But I think he's going to have a great season with UFA. It's been really good working with them actually as well, and they're very open to working with us in terms of sharing information and, you know, going back and forth. So it's been very, very good, and we look forward to him having a great season there.
Next up is Mark Masters, TSN. Go ahead, Mark.
Kyle, what are you looking to accomplish in the offseason? How do you feel you can improve this roster over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think, Mark, in every offseason, regardless of how it ends, regardless of how the season ends, we're looking to improve the team. I think the needs of the group are fairly obvious, I think, to me and probably people on the outside. We've got a goaltending situation that we need to find a competent partner for Jack Campbell and let them battle it out. Obviously, Jack had a great season. We have a lot of belief in Jack and looking forward to him continuing to take steps next year, but we need to address that. Obviously, we're going to have some opportunity up front, which I think appeals to a lot of the players that are there. If free agency doesn't bear fruit on that for us, if we don't think there's value, then we'll look at the trade market heading into the season. So I think, you know, it's easy to look now and have question marks. And I think, you know, come September when camp opens, we'll be at a different spot. But now that's where we're looking to improve sort of in order. We're quite happy with our defense last year and the way it played. I think that manifested itself objectively in a number of shots, goals, different opportunities that we gave up, and look forward to that group continuing to work together with Dean Chenault now coming in to replace Dave Haxtell, who's gone to Seattle, and roll from there. But we have to continue to get better, Mark, and that's what our full focus will be on. It may look a little bit different because of different things that happened in free agency, but our goal is to continue to improve the team every possible way that we can.
What players in the system do you believe have the potential to take on a bigger role next year?
Within the system or potentially challenged for the Leafs? Or?
Potentially challenged for playing time in the NHL?
Yeah, I think from my view of it, you know, in the American League last year with our team, you know, we had two guys that already did challenge and play, and Nick Robertson and Joey Anderson. We expect them to continue to take steps in the right direction. Thought Semyon Jurgachinsev, he needs to continue to work on his strength, but he had a really, really good season with Torpedo in the KHL, coached by David Nemirovsky there, and they did an excellent job developing him. Then he came over with the Marlies, and I thought played really well. We signed Alex Steves as a free agent out of Notre Dame. He's been making great progress through the summer based on the check-ins that we get from him. On the back end, obviously, we're expecting Sandin and Milligren to continue to push and challenge and take steps there. And then subsequent to them, you've got Christian Rubens and Matt Colwell that both had good seasons. Rubens went over and played for Latvia at the World Championship at home. And Colwell spent some time on the taxi squad and traveled with the team last year. Different, you know, almost completely different types of players, but players we expect to continue to challenge move along. And then we start to get some of our younger players from the 2018 and 19 draft coming into the system as well. So that's exciting for us. That said, you know, we feel that depth on both forward and D is an area that we also need to address in free agency to give those young players some competition and make sure that if they're not ready, that we've got the requisite depth to help out there. So we'll be active in that market as well.
We'll go with five more here, beginning with Terry Koshan, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Terry.
Hey, Kyle, good afternoon. Just the free agency question, where are you, if anywhere, with Fred Anderson and Alex Galchenyuk?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like when the negotiations get public, Terry. I know that the Hyman one obviously has, but you know, we've had communication with both camps, and I don't mean to dodge the question, but I'd just rather leave it at that. The door isn't closed on either player.
And then just getting back to Zach, then, you know, all the indications are Edmonton. Is that what you expect here? I don't imagine you're just reading some of the same things we are, but maybe you are. But is that what your expectation is by the end of the day, that it'll be an Oiler?
I really don't know. I haven't had communication from Todd Reynolds on the matter here today, Terry. So released. I have not had communication from Todd since those reports started. So if I hear from Todd on it and something happens, then we'll release it and go from there. But that's where it's at this time.
Okay, thanks, Kyle.
Right, we'll go to Jonas Siegel with The Athletic. Go ahead, Jonas.
Hey, Kyle, you kind of touched on it before, but I'm just wondering if you could expand on prioritizing protecting Justin Hall in expansion over maybe, you know, protecting a couple more forwards.
Sure. The way we looked at it, Jonas, was, you know, what do we have in Justin and what do we have him for in the future? So he signed for 2 more years. He's taken the last 2 seasons of the major steps. I understand he's 29 years old, but extremely well conditioned, low mileage overall on him. I thought, he and Muzzin together as a tandem and as a pair, especially the first 3 quarters of the season, they played against the other team's best players in our division. Those weren't a lot of easy nights. You know, speaking specifically, we go to Edmonton, Vancouver, obviously we saw what Montreal did after they defeated us. Calgary, every team in our division, Winnipeg with their top line, had very challenging players to defend against. And Jake and Justin took that role on and performed very well in it. At the end of the season, in the playoffs, I think maybe you could say they would have, maybe the effects of all of that over the course of the season and travel and just the way the season was impact them. I'm not sure, but our focus was on, we know what he's capable of. We know who he is as a person. We have a strong belief in him. He signed for 2 more years. If he's gone from our team, either an expansion or trade, can we replace what he brings at the cap hit? And we went through it dozens of different ways and looked at every iteration, knowing what the marketplace was saying about him, knowing what Seattle was likely to do, and then looking at the alternatives. You could say, well, we do have guys internally, but then you're back to the whole thing that we've chased for years, which is sacrificing your defense depth and then trying to supplement it by signing someone that's inferior to him at probably around the same cap hit. And so that was the decision that we made. We just did not think that he was replaceable, and we have a lot of belief that he's going to have a great summer, set himself up to perform at his best for 82 games and through the playoffs. And knowing Justin Hall, I would bet that he does it over the course of the next 2 seasons. And, 2 years from now, we'll look back and I'm on the record as my belief in him. And I know he'll play very well for us.
And as for that defense step, do you envision signing another Zach Bogosian type, or do you kind of look internally for growth there?
I think we'd like to give both Sandin and Liljegren every opportunity. We have to begin converting some of these guys from prospects. I think we block them a little bit. They have to earn it. So I'm not saying it's clear the path, but I think we will try to focus in on a defenseman that maybe perhaps brings a little bit more power and presence in the way that Zach did. Rubens has that a little bit as a prospect for us, but we're not flush with it. And so we'll look in free agency and trade to continue to address that. I thought Zach brought a lot for us last year, and we'll stay in touch with him as well as we get in free agency.
Right, we'll go with 2 more. Next up, Luke Fox, Sportsnet. Go ahead, Luke.
Hi, Kyle. I'm wondering what lessons you and your players can learn from the teams that went deep in the final. Or the final 4 from this past playoffs?
I think there's always a lot you can learn from teams that have success in every sport, Luke. Certainly in hockey, I think I'm always hesitant on this one because you answer what you learn from teams and the immediate response as well. And you guys haven't had their success in the past. And I never want to come up as a comparison. So I'll quantify my answer by saying we're not comparing our team to the teams that had success, even the teams that went to the Final 4. But I think what we can learn from them is that, if you look at our team and where we haven't been able to break through, I think in those final deciding games, if you go back and look at all of them, going back to 2018. We go into those games and I think we're just a little passive and on our heels, and we're trying to feel out the opposition. And the teams that have success, not just in hockey, but in other sports, they're going to get to that stage, the final four, the finals, and winning. They go out and they attack the opportunity. They don't sit back and wait for the opponent to make mistakes. They go out, they exert themselves in the way that they play. But we did that a little bit early in the series in games 2, 3, and 4. And then we had our moments in game 6. But in game 7, I thought we were a little passive and frozen. And I would say the same for game 5 in Columbus the year prior, game 7 in Boston the previous 2 years, even game 6 in Boston 2019 once they tied the game. So I think the lesson we learn and we try to impart throughout our organization is, in those moments, can we get on the attack and can we assert ourselves in the way that we want to play? We've shown moments of it at times, that we improved upon it this year. But in the end, when it's all on the line, we have to be able to get to that same level. And those teams, that didn't always happen for them either. They had to have their own breakthroughs, and that's what we have to work towards here this offseason, through training camp, through the regular season, to get ourselves ready for that. That would, I think, would be the key lesson. I don't know if you saw Julian's press conference at the end as well, like talking about the sacrifices that the players with Tampa Bay had made. Thought that was pretty bang on as well. And there's a reason why they've won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And a question on your power play, faced a lot of criticism. Do you see it more as a tactical thing, or are there a personnel issue that you're going to try and address this offseason?
I think that's more of something that Sheldon and I discussed privately, and we discussed throughout the season. And, you know, we'll discuss now myself, Sheldon, Dean, Manny, and Spencer Carberry here throughout early in the summer and get ready for the year. But yeah, I expect their power play to perform better than it did. I think we all do. There's no doubt about that. The players do. And I think it is, as it's shown at times, it is capable of performing at a very high level in the league. And I think we have the talent to get there. I think we just need to, frankly, free ourselves up of getting too far inside of our own head when things aren't going well on it, letting that snowball fester and put a stop to it. But as a team, in terms of our overall performance last year, the regular season, we did a much better job of that than in previous years. But with regards to special teams and the power play, I thought that, and I think you all watched it, so I don't have to BS anybody here. We need to continue to perform at the level we're capable of all the way through the regular season and set ourselves up to the playoffs like the best teams do.
Our last one here, we'll go to David Alter, the Hockey News. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Kyle, with the salary cap flat the way it is, when you approach free agency, not knowing if it's going to be flat for this year or a few more years, does that make long-term deals harder to figure out or less desirable to want to sign? And maybe you just continue kind of going with the short-term deals to build around your core for the upcoming year?
I think, David, it all comes down to value. And if we think something is of great value and it's long-term and the player is going to perform at the contract level or beyond, all the way down to the back end of a longer term deal, then there's no issue on our end. But it certainly is something to consider. I think that showed itself last year in the free agent market. I don't know, with an additional team this year, maybe better prospects of revenue in the season, whether there'll be a huge change this year. But I still think there's just limited space overall. Even with Seattle coming into the league, it's only one more team and 81.5 million more in overall cap space amongst the 32 teams now. So I think that is a challenge. You got RFAs coming up from different teams that, they're going to take a bigger, much larger piece of the pie. And you have teams kind of planning for that. I think we're fortunate here. We've got our core group locked up for the next number of seasons. We hope that, you know, by that time that things will start moving in the right direction. But these are the circumstances that we're in, and we have to make the best of them. So we don't dismiss anything because of the term. It just always has to be about value in that regard. So that's the way that we'll approach it here now and move forward. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.
Okay, so Thanks for sticking with us. That's Cal Dubas, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, going over a number of things. And the initial questions were the obvious ones. What's happening with Zach Hyman? Welcome back to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart. We're standing by for Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. More on the Dubas presser here with Elliot in a couple of moments. Hyman was the big story in this press conference. It was the obvious question. It's the big question. We'll see what happens at 1 o'clock Eastern, if there is indeed a deal between these two teams, and if so, what does it look like? Barney, we'll start with you. What do you make of a prospective Toronto-Edmonton deal that would allow Edmonton to absorb an eighth season of Zach Hyman?
That's wild to say, isn't it? It's hard to think about that. Taylor Hall is 29 and a free agent, just like Zach Hyman this summer, and he's looking at 4x6 with the Boston Bruins. Zach Hyman's looking at 8x5+, so $40 million. Insane to think about that. I understand Holland's thinking, which is just, you got to get it done in the next handful of years with McDavid and Draisaitl, and you do that by having the lowest possible cap hit on someone who can help, and you figure it out down the road. Hopefully, Zach Hyman's able to, you know, take care of himself and stay effective. But boy, there's almost no chance you end up enjoying that deal in the last few years. But I get what they're thinking. I get the short-term push to be good now.
Stewie?
Yeah. So again, if they do get a return for Zach Hyman there, you know, it's very, very clever, right? It was clever, you know, the maneuvering that they did with the salary cap, not losing a roster player in the expansion draft. And, you know, I was looking for clever quotes, and the best quote that I came up for people being clever is a clever person solves a problem, a wise person solves it and avoids it. So again, we're looking at this team taking the next step and being Stanley Cup contenders, and losing Zach Hyman is a big, big piece to the puzzle. And to have it happen over $1 million or $1.5 million, obviously per season, is a big, big, you know, loss. But this guy earned his money, and you have to find a way to give him his money, because this problem now is just going to keep trickling. The number one denominator here is there's not enough money because we're paying the big four too much. Well, what's going to happen now? Freddie's gone now. What's going to happen next year with Morgan Rielly? So you have to sell wins, or you have to sell hope. Right now, it's not really selling anything. So I'm not really trying to pile on, but right now, what are they selling for the future?
I think the big one here, the big holdup more than anything else for the Toronto Maple Leafs, was just the term. I think that they were prepared to go short term with Zach Hyman, but this is, and I don't blame Hyman or Hyman's camp, the Reynolds group, for doing this. This is his chance to ring the bell. You know, he's earned his way to free agency. He's got his shot. I understand the hometown discount argument, but from a player point of view, Justin, this is Zach Hyman's chance to maximize his value. And if it ends up being the Josh Anderson deal at 5.5, so be it. And that's not water that the Maple Leafs are prepared to swim in. But I don't blame Hyman at all if anyone gets on him for, well, where's the hometown discount here? He's a Toronto guy, and come on, he's enjoyed success in Toronto. Listen, man, you earn free agency, you get one chance to take this shot. If you're an NHL player, the majority of players get one shot at this. I don't mind Hyman taking his swing.
But what's the solution? What's the solution? Well, who's coming in?
Well, I don't know what the solution is, but I do see this from both sides, where it's like, you can't give Zach Hyman what you'd have to give him to stay. You can't outbid that Edmonton money. It would be terrible, right? Any deal that's more expensive than that is too big, and that's all there is to it. So you can understand Toronto letting him go, and you can understand Zach getting his money. So it's a tough situation. The team's worse for it. But Stewie, to your point, I don't see an immediate solution to fixing it.
Anything else jump out at you guys from that press conference? I mean, Dubas is always very measured and safe with his words, and he, you know, noted how he came shy a couple of times of not wanting to essentially make a media protein shake here and give anyone an instant headline. Anything, Stewie, we'll start with you. Anything from this one jump out for you?
Well, you used the quote again, bet everything on it. But usually when I bet everything on, I lose my money at the casino, I usually pick up and walk away from the table. So how many times is he going to bet everything on it? And again, I just go back to my time in Florida where, You know, we didn't really have that high expectation, but there was major movement with the roster or management or coaches when we did not achieve success. And the expectations are much higher, especially in this market. So it just seems like it's the definition of insanity. We're just going to run it back and see what goes on next year. But right now, it doesn't seem like the future is getting any brighter. Again, I like the fact that you mentioned Liljegren and Sandin are going to get every opportunity. I think they need to get a little bit younger and give guys opportunities. But you know, we're going into the draft now. They got three picks, a second rounder, a sixth, and a seventh. You have some Russian players that are very, very skilled, but you never know when they're coming over. They could be 2, 3, 4 years away. So if you're not winning now, the window's closing, you don't really have these young guys ready to step in, what is the solution? So I think now you got to do a better job of selling. Hey, there is obviously a big, big problem, but what is the solution here?
I just don't see how the Florida thing is like an argument for anything but the opposite. Like, the, you know, the turnover kept happening because results weren't there, but the team never got better. You know, like the bet that I think Dubas wants to make is that this will be like the Washington Capitals, who kept banging on the door and eventually found their way through, or the St. Louis Blues, who were good for a long time before they eventually had things break their way in a year. I think the bet is that by sticking with it, that eventually you have your success. It'll come for you if you're patient. And I think it's hard to do, but sometimes I think there's value in it.
Yeah, and Florida was 20. It's been 20 years. I was there 20 years ago, 2003, and they were bad 2 years before that, too. So, you know, you can't say, well, look at Florida. It's been 1 or 2 years where they've actually had some success, too. So right. Florida's not a good model, because I was there, and it was bad for a while, too. So I don't want to be using them as a barometer in any sense of the word.
Right.
You know, one of the analogies that's been raised around this year's edition, or this offseason's edition of the Maple Leafs, is they're at their Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan moment. Like, they're at the moment where they need to do something big, and the Raptors have shown the model, albeit in a much different sport with a lot of different things surrounding what actually goes on the court. Do you guys buy that, Justin? Do you think the Maple Leafs are at the precipice here of having to do something big?
Mm-hmm. I get the argument, yeah, because it feels like they're, you know, that they're that close, they're knocking on the door. What's the thing that's going to push them over the hump? It doesn't seem, you know, I totally get the point, but I just don't know what the translation is, because what, you know, the Raptors were a good, solid all-around team that needed a superstar, but the Leafs are superstar-laden and need to become a good all-around team around it, which you think is an easier problem to fix. But, yeah, I think the conversation is, are you trading Mitch Marner to get better everywhere else and surround the team, or are you not? And well, Marner, it seems clear to me Dubas doesn't think he needs to.
Marner's not the odd man out, but that's a conversation for Twitter, because, you know, we know how that goes. But again, I've played on a lot of teams where we were struggling, and you know, the GM would come down after trading a major piece and saying, guys, I didn't want to have to do this, but it's unacceptable what's going on right now. We had to trade a guy to get some sense of change to make it look like we're doing something. So again, you don't want GMs just making changes for the sake of doing it, but I think this group is in need of a significant change. If not, we're going to be sitting here. We've been talking about this since the beginning of the year last year. Hey, what's going on? What's going on? Is this year the year? What's going on? What changes do they need to be made? It just seems like it's been a broken record. So that's why I'm frustrated talking about it, because we keep talking about the same things and the same problems.
Let's bring in Elliot Friedman, who loves these conversations, from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Friege,
first of all, I just want to say, Anthony, when the GM was saying I had to do this because we were playing terribly, were they looking right at you when they said it?
Yeah. No, he was saying, you're next. You're next. That's what they said.
This is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you. No, actually, this is going to hurt me a lot more. Thank you very much. But I appreciate the sympathy. Dubas was asked early in the press conference about Zach Hyman and what's happening, and he said, you know, essentially, well, we've given Todd Reynolds the ability to go out and make a trade, and we haven't heard back from him yet. We are waiting. So what is the latest? Because every day flip on the Twitter hysteria machine, and it's all about Zach Hyman and the Edmonton Oilers. What do you hear? What do you know?
Yeah, I think there's a deal done there, basically. It's going to be an 8-year deal. Chris Johnston had the exact terms today, but it'll be under Nugent Hopkins, so around $40 million. And if it's a 7-year deal, it'll be closer to Josh Anderson's contract, which is about $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. But they basically got a verbal agreement there. It comes down to now, you know, if Toronto and Edmonton can work out a deal, and Dubas did address that, if it made sense for them, They could announce it as soon as today when the freeze lifts in about 20 minutes. I'm not saying it's going to happen in 20 minutes, but that's when the freeze lifts. And if not, then they'll announce it next Wednesday when free agency hits on the 28th. But he's going to Edmonton.
But before I hand this off to Justin and Stewie, can you address from your point of view what that means for both teams? Because we were just kicking around, you know, sort of what this means from the Maple Leafs' point of view, losing Zach Hyman. You know, who fills that void, and what does this mean for the Oilers? I mean, right now, you know, the hysteria is this is the Lucic contract version 2.0. Can you address it from both sides here?
Well, I mean, look, this is a player that, like, we've been talking about Edmonton and Zach Hyman for a long time.
Yes.
A long time. So he has been on their radar for quite a while. They really liked him as a player, and Hyman had a lot of interest out there. I think LA looked at him. I think Calgary and Vancouver looked at him. I think the Rangers looked at him. Obviously, they're signing Barclay Goodrow. I think the Leafs tried to keep him. There was a lot of interest, and Edmonton was willing to go farther than any other team was to get him, and they got him. And, you know, I think for the Oilers, this is prime time now for McDavid and Draisaitl. There's no more time to wait. It's damn the Torpedoes. We're going in for it now. So I think they just decided that Hyman is a guy they have to have, and they went out and got him. I mean, for Toronto, you're right. They take something out of the lineup that they don't have a lot of other guys that do, and they're going to have to go out and find someone to replace that. And I assume that's exactly what they're going to attempt to do.
Justin.
Yeah, Ken Holland's going to get a hard time, but listen, if the New York and Los Angeles want to sign a guy and you're trying to get him to come to Edmonton, it's going to cost a few extra dollars. Like, that's just the way it's going to be. I understand that.
People of Edmonton, his name is Justin Bourne.
I don't think people in Edmonton think they live in New York or Los Angeles. I think they know, Elliot. I'm not breaking them any news. Regarding the expansion draft yesterday and what unfolded, were you surprised that there wasn't more done in terms of side deals? I saw some reporting today that said, you know, if Montreal had put Jake Allen out there, it was going to take two picks and a prospects to have him not selected. Isn't it wild to me that that couldn't have been one pick or one prospect or some way to get something out of this instead of being left with no additional assets?
Seattle drove a really hard bargain there, Justin. They did. And I'm surprised there aren't more side deals, because I thought there would be, just in general, based on what happened with Vegas 4 years ago. But, you know, in the 24 to 48 hours before the expansion draft, you know, I wrote a note on Tuesday night that teams were saying it was really quiet when it came to trades. And I had a couple, I put that one out at like 12:30 in the morning, and I had a couple of people who texted me and said, I'm glad you wrote that, because we thought it was only us. And that said to me that the conversations between the Kraken and the other teams were very low. And as it stands right now, when the moratorium lifts, there's only one deal we know of, and that's Tyler Pitlick to Calgary. And I got the sense within the last 20 minutes there wasn't anything more yet. We'll see. But I think it was clear. Seattle went after the free agents. You know, they signed Rieger, they signed Larson, they signed Alexiak, they took a big run at Jaden Schwartz, and the price for not, like, Calgary was hoping that the price to save Giordano would come down from what Jeff had mentioned, a 1 and a 3. It never happened. It never came down. And Montreal, I heard a second rounder and a prospect. I saw that report today from Pierre that it was what you just mentioned. Whatever the case was, Seattle stuck to a level, and they never changed. And what I think they cared about more than anything else, and last night was proof of it, Justin, was cap space. They wanted cap space as the weapon. They don't have a lot of term. They went out and they gave 5 years to Alexiak, who was – there were a lot of teams looking at him. I just think they decided that cap hit was the most important thing, and everything else was going to be sacrificed to keep it.
Back to the Hyman thing, like, do you not see sort of the madness in not getting this deal done? I know it's probably not the money. They're probably only a couple $100,000 apart, but the main issue was term. And
I think they were more than a couple $100,000 apart. I think they were
everyone knew it was going to be 500, but I'm talking about per season cap hit.
Yeah,
but
I see what you mean. Yeah.
So the term was the problem. But if I'm Kyle Dubas, isn't that essentially someone else's problem after year five, where the deal probably could get looking not so great?
Some people think like that. Some people don't. I know there are general managers who thought like that, Anthony, to say, I'm going to punt this down the road and someone else can deal with it. But I don't think Dubas thinks like that. And the other thing is that, you know, let's just say for argument's sake, Dubas was out as GM in Toronto. I'm sure he'd like to be GM somewhere else, right? And if, you know, like when you leave a team, I remember I saw this, there's a former Washington football GM, a guy named Charlie Casserly. And I saw an interview with him after he got fired, and they asked him, you know, do you want your team to your old team to go 0-16 this year? And he said, I hope not, because that's my resume. Like, how the team does after I leave, if it does well, you can point and say, look, you know, these were some of the things I put in place and they worked. And like, you know, like if you're a young guy like Dubas and you want to be a GM again, you sign a deal that, you know, I'll punt it down the road to the next guy. Well, if it doesn't work, that stain hangs on you. So I wouldn't think like that, personally.
Speaking of general managers, Larry Brooks is reporting this as of a couple of minutes ago. Have been told that Lou Lamoriello is looking to bring both Parisi and Suter to the island. Parisi should come as no shock. Should that name?
No, we talked about it, Jeff, I think on the podcast last week, that Suter was on their radar. I think there's about four or five teams still in the race for Suter. I think Boston's looked at him. I think the Islanders have obviously looked at him. I think some of the other teams I've heard connected to him are Colorado, Dallas, and Florida. There probably are more, but those are the ones I heard that really were trying to make a push and wanted him. I'm not surprised in the least that the Islanders would be there. That doesn't come as a big shock to me at all.
Well, there be any money?
I should say too that, Jeff, that I think Suter and Seth Jones are kind of holding up the D market a bit. And once those two guys get sorted out, and I think that's going to be pretty soon, Seth Jones could be tomorrow, and Suter probably might be by the end of the weekend. I think that's going to knock a few other things loose.
Well, here becomes my question. If it's both those players to the island, is there going to be any money left for Bevilier and Pelech? And if so, how much?
He's got, what, $25 million in cap room right now?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know Suter and Parise signed big deals once, but I'm not expecting that again. With $25 million, you can do a lot of things. You can do Pelech, you can do Parise, you can do Suter, you can do, I think one of the things we're kind of wondering is what's going to happen with Beauvillier, depending on some of the things that they might do. But you could still possibly do Landeskog or Tarasenko too, depending on what the deals look like. I think the Islanders are going to be swinging for the fence, so I'm not surprised that this is being talked about.
Any idea about them bringing back someone like Kyle Palmieri?
Yes, I do think there's real. I didn't mention him. I think there's real interest in trying to bring him back. Yes,
okay.
There are some teams who suspect that they're far along on that, but I'm not expecting Lamoriello to tell me anything.
What? Really?
Yeah.
In a shocking turn of events, Lou's keeping it secret. Okay, good stuff, Friege. I know it's been a busy week, and it continues for you. Thanks so much, as always, for this.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Elliot.
Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. We are really heavy on time. Quick pause, back to wrap up this program here in a couple of moments, go over a couple of those things, and refresh the top story, which is, looks like Zach Hyman's an Oiler. More on that in moments. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hey, welcome back to the program. A couple of things as the trade freeze is about to lift here in 8 minutes. Expect, amongst other things, Tyler Pitlick to become a member of the Calgary Flames. And, for Maple Leafs fans' purposes, Zach Hyman to become a member of the Edmonton Oilers. Guys, from last night, the expansion draft, there were a few eyebrows raised, I suppose, although all the real questions were answered throughout the day. Whether it was the Montreal decision, maybe the Carolina decision, the Philadelphia decision, the Columbus decision, Justin, we'll start with you. Which of the picks surprised you most?
You rattled off a pretty good list there. I've been saying the Carolina one, but I do think Morgan Geekie's a good player. But the Jake Bean situation, he felt like a guy who, has a higher ceiling than some of those guys. You know, Max Domi not getting selected in favor of Gavin Bayreuther. I understand that they're looking for to protect their salary cap space, but I don't know, just felt like more players who were ready to play now and help the team now got passed over with the hope, I presume, of doing something with that space. So I guess we just wait and see if they actually make that happen. Maybe they trade for Jake Beaton. Let's not rule anything out.
Small one on Columbus you mentioned, because, you know, there were a couple of players. Kevin Stenland you could have gone with. I thought you could have with Dean Kukin. Like, that one was a shocker to me, too. Go ahead, Stewie. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I was just surprised because, again, there's not really any high-end forwards. I know there's some guys that are looking for some opportunities in a higher role and within the lineup, Yanni Gord and Eberle and stuff like that, too. But for Philadelphia, why not take a JVR or Voracek? I know they got some heavy contracts, but those guys can step in. They still have some good game left in them. I'm surprised they didn't pick a big name from the Philadelphia Flyers.
That's a big one. I think taking Alexander True from San Jose is another one that you look at and kind of say, like, maybe the whole plan is here just to keep as much salary cap space available for free agency or trade. This is a team that still doesn't have a number one center. You go through all those players, and even someone like Yanni Gourde, who's not going to start the season next year, there's still not a number one center in that entire mix. Could that be on Ron Francis's shopping list starting right now? We'll see. It's going to be a wild few days, and it goes right into next week's free agency. Smith and Jones next on The Fan.